Hey everybody, Nate here. Before the show, I just wanted to take a minute to talk about our sponsor, the Snack Nanny. The Snack Nanny is the latest, greatest spill-proof bowl. It's the first snack bowl for kids with a self-closing door. The Snack Nanny allows kids to snack freely without overeating, keeps kids entertained, and prevents them from creating a mess for mom and dad to clean up. Kids and parents love the Snack Nanny. It's easy to use, easy to clean, and includes portion control features that only the Snack Nanny offers. To order, go to www.snacknanny.com. or order from Amazon. Remember, you support our sponsors and they support us. Thanks and Nihei Debiru. Hey everyone, like the show? Enjoy hearing interviews with martial artists from around the world? Then share it with a friend, family member, co-worker, everyone at your dojo, your fellow karateka. You can find new episodes every Sunday at choptalk.podbean.com. That's choptalk.podbean.com. And don't forget to like the show on Facebook. Thanks. Hi everybody and welcome back to Chop Talk. I'm your host, Nate England. Last week I traveled to Nashville, Tennessee to train at the school of karate legend James McLean. When you think of American martial artists who have literally been everywhere and done everything, you think of James McLean. Mr. McLean started martial arts in 1960 under Philip Keppel and was eventually appointed as the roving chief instructor for the USKA. Mr. McLean opens a show talking about how he got started in the martial arts under Philip Keppel in Peoria, and how he eventually moved into the dojo. He goes on to talk about his school in Kansas City and the dojo wars in Chicago. He starts the second half of the show talking about his friend Jim Harris and training the Awad brothers. At the end of the show, he talks about how Mr. Keppel sent him to Phoenix to be the first contact between Grandmaster Trias and the school in Peoria. Even with the two-part episode, there just isn't time to go into everything that Sensei McLean has seen and done in his 55 years in the martial arts. To find out more about Sensei McLean and his school, go to www.koshokarate.wordpress.com. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoy the show.
I was working at this snow-capped root beer stand, and there was this football player, Thurman Allbritton, came by, and I asked him if he knew anybody that taught the martial arts, and he says, yeah, it's Mr. Keppel right down the street. And it was like, oh, a block and a half from where I was working at this old root beer stand. So I got off work, and I went down there and knock on the door, and I was getting ready to knock on the door, and here he come out. And he had, I think, a six-pack of empty Coke bottles or something. He was going to the store, and I was young, you know, and that's 16, I think. And, of course, he was about 2:30 and just got out of service.
Good, big,
real
scrappy
good shape.
Guy.
I looked at him, and I'm going, my God. And so I asked him about taking karate, and he kind of looked at me, and he says, well, we ever got any experience or anything like that? I said, well, my half-brother, he was a lieutenant colonel in the service, and he told me, taught me a couple of, well, he showed me an El Soldagari and Ogoshi, I think.
Okay.
And he told me I should get into the arts because I was out on my own, you know, from the time I was a nine-year-old kid.
Wow.
And he told me if I got into martial arts, that'd help me out a lot. So.
Yeah.
So I went down there and knocked on the door and asked him if I could study, and he looked at me and kind of laughed, and he said, well, and he practiced right down by the river above this old meat market.
It was downtown Peoria.
Yeah, downtown by the river, yeah. And they had a place up there, above the meat market. So he said, well, yeah, just bring you some loose fitting clothes and your dues, $25 a month.
Uh-huh.
So I went down there and I was yet. They weren't taking no young people at all.
Was it other people that had just got out of the service, guys in their 20s?
Yeah, type thing.
So you're the youngest guy. You were the kid.
Oh, yeah, I was a kid. And there was Reverend Foster there, and he was working out, and some guy named Gene LaBelle from Caterpillar, and Master Keffel, and one too many, 6-7 guys.
Okay.
So when I went in, they said, well, I don't know, we'll have to interview you. And they set me down in the middle and got around me and started asking me all kinds of questions.
Huh.
I'm trying to figure out what's that got to do with anything.
What were they asking?
Oh, they were asking me, you know, what do? Are you a punk? You go out and try to cause trouble? Or, what are you doing? What do you want to take karate for? And then I told them why, and he said, well. So they thought, well, hell, he'll never last.
They thought they'd run you out. You'd come to a class or two and
well,
be done.
Well, I was just young, old, skinny thing, you know, a little thing.
And, how old were you, Sensei, when you went down there?
Not quite 16, I think. Just turned 16.
So. And this was about, what, 1960, late 50s?
Yeah,
60.
1960. And that's how I got started. And Sensei was teaching really hard classes. We'd have like 2 hours of solid work training, and he'd just got all the service. And the first hour was just physical fitness.
Okay.
Push-ups, sit-ups, and
just calisthenics for an hour.
Yeah, and he'd run around. You'd be doing sit-ups, and he'd hit you in the stomach and all this kind of stuff. And there was one guy in there. He was always kind of goofing off and stuff. Since he'd been watching him, so we're doing sit-ups and stuff like that. And he turned around and dropped down to one knee. And he hit this guy in the stomach and folded his knees up to his head.
Oh.
I mean, that's just turn around and just drop down to one knee, you know. And he says, looked at him, the guy, and got the point.
There was no room for messing around at that dojo at that time.
None at all. You didn't. You just trained. It was about 2 hour classes.
What was the second half of the class? Were you working on just kata, wazas, sparring? What was
just
that second
straight
half?
Basics.
Okay.
Front kick, you know, punch. Just over and over and over and over again.
What was it that he ran? The Nikabutos?
Yeah.
So that was...
He made them up.
He wrote them.
Oh, he did?
He wrote them, yeah.
Okay. And that was out in Hawaii with the Kaju Kempo?
Kaju Kempo, yeah. Okay. It was Imperato Kempo was the style that he was teaching when Mr. McLean started with him.
Okay.
It's Imperato Kempo. It's a combination of karate, boxing, and judo.
Right. Yeah, had a lot of throws in it.
You learned how to throw a lot of combinations right from the beginning, right?
Oh, yeah. Probably saved my life.
You said you were out on your own since you were
a 9-year-old.
So that probably gave you a lot of structure. It gave you a group of guys that were professional guys. They had jobs and they were serious about what they're doing.
And then he moved from there up to the top of the hill.
Up on the top of Main Street,
yeah,
the curve of Main
top
Street.
Top of Main. I was working, before that I was working at Sandy's Driving, something like a McDonald's.
Okay.
Way back. And had some other job I was working. Got married real young to some
gal. How young?
Well, I was married 17 to some gal 21.
Older woman.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't know why the hell she married me. I guess I screwed good or something. I was in pretty good shape. I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I asked her later on why. She said, well, you're kind of cute. I just work out all day long. Never.
Yeah.
We'd go on Saturday and we'd work out. This is when he moved up. And then they got a Bernie Shelf and brown belt in there. And so I got in there and picked him as much as I could and learned as much judo I could from him.
So, because for a while there, he shared space with a judo school. So there's a judo and a judo teacher and a karate school.
Right.
There together.
Up on Man, yeah. Old Bernie Shelfman, he was a Polack. Damn dick about this long, just big around.
For reference, Mr. McLean just made a sign about the size of the bottom of a beer bottle.
I turned my back on him. Old Bernie Shelfman, I got to run around with him.
if he turned around too fast, he'd probably knock you out with it.
Oh, he's huge. I mean, huge dick. Most women wouldn't mess with him.
They scared him. They scared him.
Mess with him. I fixed him up with this one girl named Joanne. She was actually a nymphomaniac.
Yeah.
You know what a nymph is.
Oh, yeah.
They don't ever get enough. They don't ever get their nut, probably basically what it is. And shit, he loved that.
But she didn't, she was up for it.
Oh, Lord, yeah. Hell yeah.
Looking for great entertainment? Want to find the best deals on food and drinks? Use the PubPal app to find great establishments near you. View daily specials, find live bands, karaoke, even poetry. If you're looking for something to do, PubPal is the answer, and it's only a click away. Download the app on the Apple Store and get the Android app on Google Play. And don't forget to like them on Facebook. Visit PubPalUSA.com to find out more. That's PubPalUSA. PubPalUSA.
So how long, so you had moved out, so when you met Mr. Awad, you were teaching in Michigan.
Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Grand Rapids, Michigan. So how long was it before you were in Peoria, was the next stop Michigan, or did you bounce around a little bit before you got there?
I don't know, I was in Kansas City, I taught in Kansas City.
Okay.
Had a couple football players, the Chiefs with me.
Oh, pro football players.
Yeah. Eddie Lauferman, he was a big old 6'7", about 3'10", or something like that.
Wow.
So I hung around with all them guys. Had guys a ballet dancer in there. Guy was, man, he had some legs on him.
Yeah?
He had calf muscles, but not huge. I mean, he's a ballet dancer or something.
So he's probably real flexible, real good with, with the kicks.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of an eclectic group. You got the ballet dancers, you got the football players. Yeah. And you're not a huge guy.
Oh, Lord, no.
But a lot of your more well-known students are big. Ezra's huge, Mr. Awad, Duffy.
I always draw big people for some reason. I don't know why.
They want to know why this little guy's beating them up. Why is this little guy beating me up? What's up with this? We'll figure out this stuff. Figure this out.
I don't know what I'd be doing if I went into martial arts. I thought about that a lot. I was just out wandering around, you know, staying with different people and stuff. And since his father was sheriff of Peoria for about 30 years.
Okay, Mr. Keppels?
Yeah. And, of course, he just, you know, got out of service, and he was just really up on physical fitness, driving real hard. I wish he'd still do that.
Yeah, it's not quite as intense.
No, not
as
at all.
It used to be.
It should be.
That next group of guys that came through, Randy Holman, Joe Walker, Rick Beach, that was sort of the next generation that came through that school behind you, right? So did you instruct a lot of those guys at the beginning?
I taught pretty much all the classes, except when Sensei would come in and teach. And then I just moved in to school there, asked him if I could move in. He said, yeah.
Move in?
Yeah, so I moved in a dojo.
So you're living in the dojo?
Oh, yeah.
Working out in the dojo?
I lived there for about three years.
Really?
Yeah. That's all I've done was train and screw.
So you were working out all the time?
Yeah. Well, I'd get up in the middle of the night and get up to go take a leap and go in and run kata for 2 hours.
Huh.
Just all Nikko Buddhist. And I'd, we went to Chicago the very first tournament. I think since they had 7 or 8 guys, just animals. This one guy named Paul Dusenberry was just a natural athlete.
Yeah.
He went to Bradley College, and he was a really good athlete. And he took Paul, myself, and 2 or 3 other guys up to Chicago at Rich Demers' school up there. He had John Keehan and all them way back then.
Mm-hmm. Well, John Keehan and
right?
Count Dante.
Yeah, Count
right?
Dante.
That's
yeah.
how a lot of people are. Yeah. With the Dojo Wars, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was a good brown belt. That's about it. And he just, his folks were real wealthy. They were doctors. His dad was. And John was just a nice looking guy, real brilliant, good salesman.
Mm-hmm.
But he had to go that bad route.
Did he go off the deep end?
Yeah, the first
was it was it just a gimmick? Because it was in comic books, right? Learn the death touch from
that came a little later too.
Yeah,
just later. After what any of that stuff was. Yeah. Sensei's talking about.
He was a good brown belt. And he went to 2 or 3 tournaments and fought and done real good, and he was tough. And then he
wanted Mr. Keppel to be under him, right? And he wanted you to be under him.
Oh,
trying to get everybody to be under him.
Under him, yeah.
I went to arts. And of course, Mr. Keppel and Mr. McLean weren't having any of that.
Oh, no. Anyway, I came back from, I think, Kansas City and went to Chicago and started teaching at Charlie Brown. He was a black guy. Had a school right in Evergreen Park, Chicago.
Okay.
Rich, yeah, real rich area. And then I lived in that school, too. Lived there for a while.
Nice.
I live in a lot of dojos.
That's great. You got a place to stay, and usually some soft mats to sleep on wherever you go.
Yeah.
Now in those days, it's not like
that's
now.
When they tried to burn the dojo out, John Keehan.
They tried to burn the dojo?
Yeah.
While you're sleeping?
Well, yeah. They said I had a big old barrel back there where you throw your towels and stuff like that.
Uh huh.
I just happened to come in, and I smelled something. I said, dang, I smelled something. And just caught it.
Wow.
And then there was one where, didn't it, Charlie Brown's dojo, he put blasting caps on the front glass, right? Where you were teaching, for Charlie Brown?
Yeah.
And he was one of the black karate pioneers in Chicago, had so much dojos. And they tried to blow up, they put, not dynamite, but blasting caps on the front window.
Keehan, he wanted to take over everybody.
Okay.
So he wanted me to come to Chicago, and of course I went there, and he was trying to get me to get under him, and I said, what do you got to offer me, buddy? You nuts? What's wrong with you? And we was driving, and since they came up, and he was in the back seat of the car, and I was in, somebody else was driving, I was in the front seat, and he was telling Sensei some kind of bullshit. And I said, Ken, I said, that's a bunch of damn garbage shit. I said, just stop this car. You get your ass out here and I'll just whoop your ass right now. Sensei said, Mr. McLean. Of course, later he laughed at me. You know.
Yeah,
he was running a bunch of shit, trying to get him under his thumb, more or less. Mm-hmm. But Keehan was pretty tough, and he wasted a lot of talent.
With the bizarre
stuff. Yeah, I just went nuts. You know, beauty school and, you know.
The women.
We used to help. He and I used to screw like all of Playboy bunnies up here in Chicago.
Yeah?
Yeah. That's it.
Well, they had, literally, they had the Playboy Club up there, right?
Yeah, well, we had a lot of girls. Playboy. We're both good-looking guys.
Yeah,
dressed good and all that stuff. I don't know what happened, but you just couldn't find hardly anybody to work out with. Judo, you could. Chicago's got some good judo schools. Johnny Osako, remember? Ever hear him?
No, I didn't.
He's one of the old legends. Gene LaBelle.
Sure, Gene LaBelle.
He was a good judo guy.
And you did both.
You
jumped in with the judo guys and the karate.
Right.
And everything else too. Mr. McLean trained everywhere.
Yeah.
The Bernie Chauffin guy was a jiu-jitsu teacher.
Judo guy.
Yeah. He was a judo guy too.
started jiu-jitsu under Doug Gross.
Doug Gross.
Yeah. He was a cop there in Peoria. I did, anywhere I could pick up anything. You know, I don't care what. I'd try to, you know, pick up all the knowledge I could.
And travel around to get it.
And it was a big boxing, a lot of boxing going on in there, and I got big good buddies with this boxing coach. Picked his brain.
A lot of that probably applied to the sparring, the kumite.
Well, yeah, I mean, you learn, you know, you can.
Well, Mr. McClain used to get in a lot of trouble for hitting people with combinations at tournaments, didn't he, Sensei? Mm-hmm. They didn't really like that so much.
Well, yeah, I'd you know, hit them when it's like working a wasa. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't score nothing. You know, they wanted it, you know, clear.
It was like a straight C-can in and out.
Yeah, you know, a reverse punch, something like that.
So in that tournament circuit at the time, there was a lot of guys, really well-known guys. I mean, you know, yourself, but Bill Wallace, Joe Lewis, Chuck Norris, those
Yeah, they
all...
came later.
Okay.
Yeah, they came much later.
They were in the early 70s. You were,
okay.
Yeah.
Early 60s.
So you're a little bit before them.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Before most of them.
Yes, yeah, significantly before most of them. Like, if he would have been competing with Lewis or something, it would have been like late in his career they were competing simultaneously. Like, he was really before all those guys. He was the same generation as like Jim Harrison.
Okay.
That group of people.
There's a tough guy right there, Jim Harrison.
Jim Harrison? Where's he from?
When I first met him, he was teaching in Kansas City, Missouri. And I was teaching for Dr. Yenny. And Dr. Yenny tried to get me and Jim, trying to get us to fight.
Was he going to sell tickets?
So Harrison came over to see me, but I had met Harrison once before. And we was putting up car washes somewhere down in that area, just to make some money. Mm-hmm. And I met him. And Harrison's a tough guy, really tough.
Pretty heavy.
And he's not a real big guy.
Not just like a tournament guy. Mm-hmm. I mean heavy, like he could like really fight. You know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, Harrison. Yeah, he's killed two people.
Sure killed them?
Yeah.
How? Why?
Well, one guy tried to rob him.
Okay.
And he killed him.
Shit. Punched him, hit him, shot him?
He just killed him.
Shit.
Guy had a gun. And then he was a cop for a while. They advised him he needs to get off the force. He'd pick some guy up and you'd bring him in, he'd be bloody all over the place. He just can't do that shit. He was a nut.
Hey everyone, like the show? Enjoy hearing interviews with martial artists from around the world? Then share it with a friend, family member, co-worker, everyone at your dojo, your fellow karateka. You can find new episodes every Sunday at choptalk.podbean.com. That's choptalk.podbean.com. And don't forget to like the show on Facebook. Thanks.
Tell us about Dr. Yenny.
So Yenny, well, Yenny, his whole Yenny, Dr. Yenny, he was a chiropractor, mm-hmm. And he taught me all the adjustments in chiropractic work. So if you ever need an adjustment,
sure. Well, I got this trick in my neck. I might take you up on that. Actually,
I can sure do it. And but Harrison's he's somewhere in. Way back up in the mountains, got a judo school. He was a good judo guy, but he was crazy. Real crazy. He took Janice Walgreen, who was his girlfriend, and they got into it or something. Something crazy, and a lot of stuff I don't agree with at all. But he was one of them nuts, and he choked her out. I guess he thought she was dead, and he was going to take her out to the throw her in the river or lake or something. I'm not lying to you. Got out there, and damn, she didn't wake up. And hell, they just started back going together.
Wow.
Now think about that.
That, for a lot of women, that.
Think about that.
For a lot of women, that would be a deal breaker.
She could whoop most men. She could whoop most men any her around her body size.
Yeah.
Wow.
He's crazy. Well, he's still living. And Parker Shelton and Jim Harrison, they competed with each other.
Okay.
All that, and I met them in a tournament one time, long time ago.
Parker Shelton, he's in Indiana.
Fort Wayne.
Was in. He passed away.
He passed away. 2 or 3 years.
Oh, that's right.
God, we lost many people. It's nuts.
Yeah. There's been a lot of karate guys, a lot of well-known karate guys.
Oh, yeah.
That have died the last year and a half, 2 years.
But Harrison, he's got him to school, I think. Somewhere way back up in the mountains, like.
Mm-hmm. He's kind of a compound.
Yeah. Something like easier to hide the bodies.
Well, that's the thing. He has kind of a compound. He teaches like all kinds of different stuff, like firearms, different kinds of like.
Okay.
Sure, like a militia camp or something like
that. Well, I don't know about that, but it's like, you know, SWAT team type of stuff. It's not like a militia with any kind of political bent or anything. He teaches people all kinds of different martial
survival
arts, tactical, survival kind of, yeah, all that kind of
like
stuff.
Militia.
So anyway, he, Dr. Yenny, he, trying to get me and Jim Harrison into it.
Mm-hmm.
Harrison came over to see me, and of course I hadn't met him at one previous term, and we got to talking. I thought, well, Jim, we're going to do something about this. And he said, well, what do you want to do? I said, well, I don't know. He needs to be taught a damn lesson. And I said, let's just let it go. And I said, all right, well. So we was at a tournament. It was a big tournament. And we was up on this, I don't know, way up in a hotel, way up high. And Yenny just happened to, which is bad timing, he just happened to walk in there. And Harrison was there. And Harrison was going to pick him up and throw him off the damn building. And I said, Jim, he ain't worth it now. I said, you're going to go to prison. I said, you got all these witnesses. I said, you don't do that, man, please. So he let him go. But that's the way Jim was.
Wow. Well, I'm glad you were there to talk him out of it.
But we, yeah, we.
Jesus
Christ. We got real tight. Ask about old Jim Harrison, some of these old guys way back in that day. But mm-hmm. You probably heard some stories.
He was, if you've ever seen what network was it since they put on the Kumite thing? There was a, one of the networks like ABC.
One of them cheers were broke.
Like ABC or NBC.
Mm-hmm.
Had like a, they were going to have like a, karate thing, like a where they showed like kumite, basically not kata, but like
spar.
Just showed it as like a sport kind of.
Uh-huh.
And Jim Harrison was the referee on that. It's pretty. You can see it on YouTube. It's relatively well known. He was the referee, and it had Joe Louis and David Suzuki, maybe David Moon. David Moon.
Korean guy.
And some other guys. Skipper Mullins, I think.
Skipper Mullins, yeah.
You got that on VHS, don't you?
Since yeah. You got it on VHS.
How about Mel Wise?
Mel?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's Mel was one of my students for 2 years.
Yeah.
He stayed with me in Kansas City.
Okay. Well, they give him an award out every year with him, the Mel Wise Award, right?
Yeah. We were real close together.
Real good karate man that died too young, right?
He's in there in the dojo. You see that?
The photo?
Picture.
Yeah.
Since
I'm Mr. Boyle. Yeah, a long time ago. I was teaching in Grand Rapids, Michigan. That's how they once met me. Okay. I had seen them at a tournament. They had just got into karate for, I don't know, a couple of months or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And I talked to them and run into them, and I guess they asked a bunch of questions about me and found out where I was.
Mm.
And this is in 67.
Okay. They started in Cincinnati with Victor Moore.
That's where it was, yeah, Victor Moore.
Right.
Started with him. And then the tournament circuit was going around. Oh, Vic was a tough old boy.
Mm.
And, so they asked me if they could come to my dojo. And I said, yeah. And they were young. I think Tommy was, or Mike was like 17 or something.
Mm-hmm.
On down. And I think Tommy was 12 or something like that.
Okay. Yeah, they were all still in high school or junior high.
Yeah. So they came there, and I had a big old house with my dojo in front and apartments upstairs and, you know, this kind of thing. And so they came there and started with me there. And it was in 67.
And they carried on the tradition, right? They lived there at the dojo, or lived in the apartments above the dojo.
Yeah, above the dojo, yeah.
They spend the
same. Didn't cost them anything, rent, you know.
Now, Rick was telling me, Rick Awad was telling me a couple weeks ago that you considered them full-time students. And so you would sneak up on them in the middle of the night.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
To make sure that they were on their toes?
I'd do all kinds of stuff. A lot of fun.
I was when we were up at the tournament last, Mr. Keeney was talking some about how y'all became friends.
Yeah.
That's like one of the things that I was talking with Nate about recently is, you know, just how good of friends and how tight all you and Mel Wise and Parker Sheldon, Glenn Keeney.
Oh yeah.
You know how good of friends all you guys were.
Yeah.
And I think all y'all ended up really being like different under different style systems, but really just had like a really
real tight, yeah,
real all good real camaraderie tight. Between y'all. He was telling some of those stories about how you'd been to stay with Mr. Shelton, and then you'd come down to stay with Mr. Keeney and Mr. Wise. Just kind of a triangle of karate traveling.
Yeah, work out.
And you lived with Dave Hammond in his dojo for a while.
Yeah,
that was later.
Is there any dojo you haven't slept in?
I slept in a lot of them. Dave's a good man.
Yeah.
He had a beautiful dojo, huge.
In Champaign.
Yeah.
Looking for great entertainment? Want to find the best deals on food and drinks? Use the PubPal app to find great establishments near you. View daily specials, find live bands, karaoke, even poetry. If you're looking for something to do, PubPal is the answer, and it's only a click away. Download the app on the Apple Store and get the Android app on Google Play. And don't forget to like them on Facebook. Visit PubPalUSA.com to find out more. That's PubPalUSA, PubPalUSA.
When did you meet Grandmaster Trias for the first time? Because when you started with Mr. Keppel, had him and Mr. Trias already got together and had Mr. Keppel joined the USKA, or was that shortly afterwards, or how did that come about?
What happened there was, Doug Crose, he was a cop there in Peoria, mm-hmm. and Master Keppel's father was sheriff from Theory about 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
Doug Gross told Master Keppel that he'd heard of a man in Arizona by the name of Master Trias, and that he was, you know, he was a state trooper at the time,
mm-hmm.
and just straight as an arrow and all that. And of course, later days he wasn't straight as an arrow.
Later, that arrow started wobbling a little bit.
Yeah. Master Trias and Master Keppel, he was talking on the phone, and Master Keppel couldn't get away. And so he sent me out there.
Okay.
Well, you were like about 17 or 18 at this point.
Yeah, he sent me to
this is kind of investigate
to
things.
Phoenix. So I hitchhiked to Phoenix.
Okay. You hitchhiked?
Well, yeah.
Well, yeah.
Oh, well, okay. Well, it was the 60s, I guess.
Everybody hitchhiked.
That's the way it was. That's the way it was. Yeah, you could get a ride. Well, right now, you couldn't borrow. I mean, it'd be dangerous.
Right.
Yeah. It is really dangerous.
People don't trust
you. Hitchhiker.
You
don't know.
And you get picked up.
And, of course, you don't know who you're riding with either. So he sent me to Phoenix. So I had to go to Phoenix and represent Master Kevill and all that and association. And Master Trius taught me Kunkusho personally.
Wow. Yeah.
The only thing he didn't do was the jump. He just kind of stepped back.
Okay.
He was a big old, he was 240 then.
Yeah. But he made you do the jump, right?
Oh, Lord, yeah. But I lived in, I stayed there, I didn't leave the dojo for 12 days. And I'd go out with him to eat and come back. That was it. Boy, fast, things changed, God.
Yeah, so he was very strict.
Oh, Lord.
As far as what was going on, anything that was going on in the dojo. And
oh, yeah, absolutely. In them days.
And you had some sort of incident with him with that where, like, you had a friend showed a girl some pictures just in, like, the front room of the dojo.
Oh, yeah, I went up to this angry, little cocktail bar up there and brought this girl back down to the dojo. And it was just, I didn't take her. Had a little front there, you know, had a couple of seats, pictures all over, and I. And they had this guy named Ross Riggins.
Okay, Ross Riggins.
Ross Riggins, yeah. He lived at the yoga, and then Master Trius picked him up on the beach. And he was under medication. Master Trius took care of all his medication and all that kind of stuff. And so Riggins, Ross Riggins, he'd tell Master Trius everything that went on. And so I brought a couple of my two ladies, and I brought them down and just showing them the pictures and all that. So he called Master Trius up. Master Trius up, told him, and Master Trius come back. And he was real strict then. And he called me in the office there, and he says, "What's this I hear about you had some women in here?" And I said, I told him what it was. And he said, "Well, I probably already just like, I'm gonna call you, call your sensei up, talk to him about this. I'll get back to you."
That probably.
Well, I was just.
Because you were just a kid at the time. And you're gonna call the sensei. Yeah.
I didn't do it to be disrespectful or anything. Just
right.
So that's how it all got started.
So did he? Did he forgive you for the women?
Well,
did he tell you to start hitchhiking the other way?
No, he just said, "Don't let that ever happen again."
Okay.
He's real strict.
And the Ross guy, he was crazy, but told me one time that he had really incredible breath control, right?
Oh, he was unbelievable. He'd do a San Chin like nobody in the world. Yeah. Real, and he found him on the beach.
Found him.
Pretty
much.
Found him on the beach.
Found him out on the beach, you know, standing there, and got talking to Ross. Some reason, I don't know why, but he was talking about breath control and all this kind of stuff, and Ross could run like, had breath control, unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And so he taught him, he kind of took him back to Phoenix, and he taught him San Chin.
Mm-hmm.
And my God, boy, what breath.
Mm.
But he'd take me to these soup kitchens. And you'd have a little.
Rosswood or Master Trius Wood?
Oh, Rosswood.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I was out there, you know, didn't have a whole lot of money. He says,
"Right.
Come on there, Mr. McClain, just go get some soup." And went over and we'd get a bowl of soup and you'd have two or three peas in it, two or three little pieces of corn in it. It was something to eat, you know. And some old dried up bread. But I tell you, it was good.
Yeah.
I didn't have any money.
Yeah. Had to eat something.
Did any of the bums get pissed and you took their place in line?
No.
What was the? I remember when I first started. You told me that there was all different. Mr. Trius would have all different kinds of kumite stuff at his dojo when you first started going there.
What do you mean?
As far as like different like kind of contest sparring and stuff like that, did you guys spar a lot in there? Did you spar real hard, or what was it like as far as all that?
Well, you didn't wear any protection. You just fought barehanded.
Sure.
No pads, no safety punch, no headgear, mouthpiece, cup.
I never wore a cup, but I think you could have a cup. But a mouthpiece, I never wore a mouthpiece, which is really dumb.
Was it basically like upon Kumite sparring? Or were
not sparring.
It was just straight up sparring. People get knocked out.
You could go in and throw the guy and throw him down.
Punch yes, sir.
Him. Arm barring, whatever you want to do.
Though there wasn't the point, you weren't doing the points?
Oh, no, one of the points.
Okay.
It's just going at it.
You're just going to spar.
I guess it's a good way of learning how to do it. What works? Yeah.
No, there weren't no points.
That's about how we do most of the time.
So then you learned Kankusho, there in Phoenix, and you took it back to Peoria.
Yeah, and then I had to forget it.
You had to forget it?
Yeah.
How's that?
Because he wasn't high enough rank to know it.
When I high enough rank.
He wasn't learning it for him to learn it. He was learning it for him to take it back up there and
to
show
take it
to
back
Master
there.
Cap.
Okay. So you took it back to Peoria.
That's what that'd be like.
Showed it to Mr. Keppel.
Yeah, that was
supposed
like,
to do it anymore.
That was the hardest thing I ever done in my life.
Yeah.
It just embarrassed me to do that, you know.
To teach your teacher the kata.
Yeah.
Well, how did he take that?
Well, pretty good, I guess.
Yeah. And then he told you to forget it?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to forget stuff.
So you'd work it in one of those late night sessions, right?
No, Master Keppel didn't. He said, work it. That's what he told me.
Yeah. Well, you're the guy who brought it back and learned it, and if it wasn't for you, none of them would have it.
And at that time, I mean, you were training so much, it didn't really take a very long time for you to become a black belt either, because you were training so many hours
all the
per
time.
Day.
I trained all the time.
Yeah. I remember you told me that
in the middle of night
when
train,
I started
to take a leak, and I trained a couple hours.
A lot of people talk about training. Well, I've been training in martial arts for this many years. And Mr. McClain would ask him, well, how many hours have you actually trained?
That's
you say you've
key.
Been going in a dojo for like 10 years or something, but how many hours have you really trained?
Is that
really?
An hour, a couple hours a week?
Yeah, because I mean, and a lot of people, they'll say that. You know, I've been training karate for this long or whatever. Well, they really only train like 3 hours a week or something like that, where Mr. McClain, he might have trained 40 or 50 hours in a week in, you know, for a year. Imagine how good you'd be.
It's like a full-time job.
That's really all I thought about.
Just karate training, martial arts.
Yeah, you know, I found something I could belong to because my life was really kind of messed up. So I don't know what else I'd be doing right now.
Thanks for listening to today's show, and make sure you tune in next week when Mr. McClain shares a few stories about Elvis, the different friends he's made in the martial arts, and being rejected by the army for having flat feet. We'll see you next week. Hey everyone, like the show? Enjoy hearing interviews with martial artists from around the world? Then share it with a friend, family member, co-worker, everyone at your dojo, your fellow karateka. You can find new episodes every Sunday at choptalk.podbean.com. That's choptalk.podbean.com. And don't forget to like the show on Facebook. Thanks.